This is just the line from 0 to 1. You have any Fermi distribution. Anyone that we take for time being a flat distribution. But you assume, of course, that P of X is non-negative and integral over the space P of X dx is equal to 1. So as you can guess, conclusion is very simple. There's no one unique distribution we all agree is the best for all possible cases. Case by case, different distributions might be used for different purposes, and maybe it's a good idea to make a discussion to realize for what cases, what distributions are, well, likely to be good. So first, let us discuss again this very simplest case. We have numbers. So again, random numbers. Let's assume we would like to take random numbers according to this distribution. So let me ask a provocative question. If you ask me to give a random number that I write is equal to 0, 2, 3, 1, 7, is it a good choice or not? Well, you might say it's a stupid question. This question answer is as good as, let's say, x2 equal to, I don't know, square root of pi over 11 or whatsoever. If I have only one number, it's very stupid to say that it's random or it's not random. However, if I have many of those, the more the better, then I can tell something if they are really independently. What's here important are IID, so it means independent, identically distributed numbers. So let's make such a test. For instance, I have here a segment from 0 to 1, and I assume I take, okay, not so many, let's say 5 numbers, which are random, taken from this uniform distribution. I order them, and I plot it for you. So let's assume in one case I will have crosses. I will have some crosses like this. They are really distributed in a nice uniform way. So this is case A. And in case B, I will put dots. I will say 5 dots or whatsoever. So now how do you think? Which case is better? So better means it's more likely I will get from random number generator crosses or circles. How do you think? Who is for crosses? Nobody. Too bad. They are really placed very nice in a uniform way. But as you see, more of you are for dots. Why is it so? Of course you are right. Because here you assume here are correlations, are very strong correlations. Basically, if you ask somebody to draw numbers with a uniform distribution, it's very likely he will write them like this. Because we have a kind of feeling it must be very uniform, and it is uniform. Here, however, it's not the case. There are very large gaps. In fact, if you really take those numbers at random, this gap probability scales P of S as e to minus S. It has a Poissonian property, so it's called clustering of levels. Clustering means that here P of S scales like e to minus S. It's very likely to have small distances clustered of points. By the way, yes?
The S. What if I were to say that I think the probability of getting the X's is exactly the same as the probability of getting the circles?
Okay, if you are, okay, of course it's still possible, especially if you have only 5 of those. Well, you should have many more and take exactly to compute, for instance, the probability distribution of distances between them. Then if the limit only n goes to infinity, you could then say that really one distribution is very unlikely, second, it's more likely. With 5, of course, you cannot do much. It's still better than with 1. Anyway, I see that there's something like more than 24 people here around. You know, it's a very good joke. If you, I ask you, what, how do you think? Is it likelihood that there are 2 people at the audience, I don't know you so well, who celebrate the birthday at the very same day? You know this joke? Is this probability larger than 1/2 or smaller than 1/2? How do you think? Let's assume we are 24 here. So on average, it means that only 2 people will celebrate birthday 1 month. Yes? So it's like very unlikely that we will find 2 guys, or ladies, oh, there's ladies, who celebrate birthday on the same day. And you know what the answer is? If it's more than 23 of us, and there is, the probability is larger than 50%. It's exactly the same effect. Because let's assume here is a year, and we put on random, or let's assume we are really born on random, perhaps an assumption, that it's very likely that there will be clustering, which basically means that it could be clustering, in this case, to 0. We celebrate birthday in the very same day. It is just a fact we are not, we hope, not correlated. Our births are not correlated. It's the same effect, and it contributes to our understanding of randomness. So I can only assure you I have only one page of my notes, so I will, it will not take forever. Then, at the first, I want to convince you that this flat distribution is somehow the best. Well, it is very simple. If you ask somebody who says, oh, I did something on random, very often it happens even in our community, people write some papers and like, they did something on random, they have not even specified what the distribution was, then such a statement is for me pointless, because if you don't specify what distribution was, then a statement does not tell us much. However, very often people believe that if you say at random, it must mean it should be, this distribution should be taken. Well, now we can argue, this is the discussion. I will ask you for your opinion in a second. But before this will happen, I will plot for you another distribution. Okay, let me make it a bit larger. It's an important distribution. Again, we have an interval, a segment from 0 to 1. And not giving you the formula, I will plot such a strange distribution, which looks very odd. For some of you, it may be very odd because it's even singular. So this probability goes here and here to infinity, although this is well-defined distribution since it's integral. It's integral. Well, you will see in a second. But have you ever seen a distribution? Do you think it's a good one? You can say, oh, it's a very stupid idea. Why should I have very large probabilities here or there? So before we continue, I will just explain one thing. The key point here is the topology. But the topology of the segment is very simple. It has two pure states, 2 points. And those 2 points, like here, they cause problems. 1 point here, 1 point there. Why they cause problems? Easy to see. Because if you have a kind of Gaussian-like distribution you would like to have, you know that if we treat this number x as a probability, so x has to belong to the segment from 0 to 1, we cannot have probability which is negative. So somehow this Gaussian, if here is 0, here is x, has to be squeezed somehow by force. This part has to go here. The same occurs at 1. You cannot have probability larger than 1. So you see that those two edges cause problems. And if we change the topology, how can we change the topology? Instead of having a variable x which belongs to the integral 0, 1, we define a variable phi, which is equal to pi x. And of course, we say that we make it cyclic. So now this is our variable phi, which goes from 0 to 2 pi. And here you will have no problems, because if we identify 0 and 1, there's clear for each of us, there's one distinguished distribution here. B of phi is equal to, well, what is this? 1 over 2 pi. It's really flat. 1. Because it's invariant with respect to unitary rotations, so with respect to rotation in this case. So this very measure, it's really the only distinguished by this property of being invariant. And it's a simplest example of the famous Haar measure. To have a Haar measure, you need a group. Here's a group of rotations. So by the way, this Haar measure for the sphere, this is sphere S1, is just d phi. So the sphere S2 is just the uniform distribution at the sphere. So the measure will be d theta sine theta d phi, and so on. We can have it for the sphere, so unitary. We'll use it for the unitary group, and so on. So Haar measure, let me argue, is distinguished, and it's possible to apply, to define it, if it is a compact group like this. So now let me go here. You see what the problems were. The problems were those two edges. And the fact that there's no operation or action, like group action, and we cannot find a higher invariant measure. And now concerning your question, it's a so-called distribution I have in mind is, let me write it somehow with a full glory, P of x is equal to 1 over x, 1 minus x square root, a normalization factor, which I believe is pi. Well, and this is important distribution. It looks like this, more or less. Mm-hmm. And I will use the name. It is so-called Jeffreys prime. So if you have not seen it yet, so please look at it again. And realize a strange thing. I will just give you a sound argument why it is important, especially if we discuss about probability distribution. So P of x, where x is treated as a probability distribution. It really has some philosophical consequences. Basically, it means in normal life, OK, it means you could interpret it like this. It's very likely you have a very small or very huge probabilities. Well, maybe it's a zero statement. Look, if it is a meaningful statement, what is the likelihood I will go to Siberia or to Alaska next week? I hope it's a small probability. And if I ask about the probability of going to Poland, I hope it's close to one. So if you take all possible questions, you could think that perhaps this is the case in your life. Some probabilities will be very huge, close to one, and some perhaps close to zero. But now, to be more serious, let's try to find that good argument why this is really a good distribution. Okay, good. Maybe not good, but somewhat distinguished. So it's enough to say we have now n samplings, so sampling consists of n trials. And we, with probability x, so p is equal to x, we toss a coin and we ask about, we use the basically Bernoulli scheme, and we ask what is the probability n is fixed, then you get m heads or n tails, and of course you know the result. It's n over m p to, sorry, x to m, now I need my notes, 1 minus x to n minus m, I hope it's right, Bernoulli scheme. But now you assume, and here is the relation to your question, that n is huge. Now is the assumption that n is really huge, and you use Stirling approximation. What you get? Of course, you get Gaussian. What would it be like, this Gaussian for you? So it's, okay, it's enough place, I hope. It's important Gaussian, because the variance changes with x. So the formula is 2 pi n x 1 minus x e to minus n over 2. Now it will be x minus m over n. Yes? Mm-hmm. Sorry. Let's think. Well, it's okay. Square over x 1 minus x. Okay, this is a standard Gaussian, but the point is that the variance, let me write it explicitly, variance is equal to x1 minus x up to some constant, so sigma is equal to square root of x1 minus x. And this is the important point, because it means that if we now plot, again, the same picture from 0 to 1, we fix n, so n is fixed. What changes now is only this x. Here, I'm sorry, it's a bit, let me call it now here x prime, because x is now the parameter which gives me the probability. And what I want to show, plotting those figures, I have to take into account that if x is close to 1/2, we have a relatively broad Gaussian. Sigma is the largest. If now you go closer to the ends, it becomes narrower, then it's even narrower, or very narrow, close to the end of the segment, because it's just given by the formula. So of course here, you can see the, you can write the envelope, which looks now like this. And the main issue is that you can distinguish two distributions if they are sigma apart. Let's say this can be distinguished from this. But the sigma is a function of x, okay, in this case of x prime. So this is called distinguishability measure, because it allows us to draw on a random point with a probability which is related to the fact how close you can distinguish between neighboring points. So this is the key argument why this formula is, in a sense, distinguished. Yes? Well, so basically, this probability distribution, okay, related to Jeffrey's trial, the Jeffrey's trial is just behaves like 1 over sigma. So, behave like 1 over square root of x, 1 minus x. So, this is n concerning the case n equals 2, but now let me briefly go to the. Okay, sorry, n sampling was here, was n realizations. Now I change vocabulary, I'm sorry. I will now use them letter, I don't know, M M is the number of outcomes. So here we had M was equal to 2. So we had, in fact, probability was probability of x and 1 minus x. Now we have M possible outcomes of our experiment. So we work in the probability simplex. Now x is a vector, which is equal to x1, xm. And I will say that it belongs to the simplex of eigenvalues. OK, simplex of probability simplex, which basically is the simplex of the dimensionality m minus 1. So you know how it looks like. For m equal 3, it's just a famous triangle where we have 3 pure states, 1, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, and 0, 0, 1. And then it's good to define concrete distribution to remind you, because of course you know, especially those who like Bayes analysis, they will know Dirichlet distribution, which is defined exactly in the simplex. Let's call it d alpha of x, of vector x, which has m components. It is, there is a normalization constant times a delta, which assures that sum of all xi from 1 to m is equal to unity. And the key factor is a product phi of I from 1 to m xi to power alpha minus 1. Now you see that if alpha is equal to 1, this cancels, so you have exactly the flat distribution. We started from the very beginning. We think it's OK, it's also not bad, the flat one. However, if we now take alpha equal to 1/2, you have 1/2 minus 1 is minus 1/2. And look, minus 1/2 is exactly this. We have to erase x and 1 minus x. 1 minus x is x2 in this notation, to power minus 1/2. So alpha equal 1/2 gives us, let's say, Jeffrey's or statistical distribution. It's also called statistical distribution. So among all those, the family of Dirichlet distributions, which are parameterized by an arbitrary real number, two numbers are definitely distinguished. One is flat, and 1/2 is statistical distribution. So one small statement is a fact. Oh, no, this doesn't work. So if you take now, oh, let me put it here, a random point, so fact is simple. OK, I have to tell you that the point x, y, which belongs to the any sphere or hypersphere s to n minus 1. And now I, so that means that sum over I yi square is equal to 1, just the definition of the sphere. And now if I define another vector xi, which is equal to yi square, so it means that x just belongs to the probability simplex. Mm-hmm. And this is trivial. But now the assumptions, if y is distributed according to this natural Hall measure at the sphere, then it follows that x is distributed according to the statistical distribution with alpha equal to 1/2. Well, OK, you need just to change the variables, change, calculate Jacobian to see that you will get exactly, because of Jacobian, this 1 over square root you need. So it is so. So now, taking the case n equals 3. Huh? Yes?
I don't mean to cut you off, but we did want to make it a discussion, and we're running
I'm going to speed up. So OK, you're right. So here it is the classical simplex. You have a flat distribution. So here is x1, x2, x3. And if you now take a sphere, and take an octant of the sphere and put uniformly points at the sphere, you will get here the statistical distribution with alpha equal to 1. And here's alpha equal to 1/2 on one hand, and alpha equal to 1. So it means that changing distribution going from the flat to the statistical means you will have to take the triangle and blow it into the part of the sphere. OK, since I'm about to finish, OK, so this was the one part, one page, and then it's reversed, just quantum case. But quantum case, I will treat fast, because it's enough to understand what happens in classical probability simplex. So in the quantum case, okay, without unnecessary definitions, I just take law, I can diagonalize it, write it, it's equal to u lambda u dagger, our eigenvectors, eigenvalues, and I can define the product measure. The p of law is basically p of u times p of lambda. It means that they are independent eigenvalues, eigenvectors. Next assumptions would be that this p is p of u is, let's say, pH. So it's a Haar measure. They are the all distributions which are isotropic. It means in the Bloch ball, you have isotropic distribution of the points at the CU. So if you make such an assumption, the only thing which is still missing is what is p of lambda. So for n equal 2, p of lambda, lambda is a vector. So lambda, again, lives in the simplex of eigenvalues. In the case of n equal 2, p of lambda is determined by one single variable, p of r, where r is just the radius inside the Bloch ball. So you have here the Bloch ball, and r, let's say you can normalize the c that it goes from 1 to 1 half, and you ask what is p of r. So one possible choice is flat measure inside the Bloch ball. It corresponds to Hilbert-Schmidt measure. And then p of r, as you can guess, behaves like r to 2. Why? Just take the Jacobian to put points uniformly inside the ball. It corresponds to the following distribution. P of hs of lambda is proportional to pi of j minus k lambda j lambda k minus lambda j squared. You have product between of the square of difference between eigenvalues. In the case of n equal 2, you have two eigenvalues, so the difference proportional to the r, so you get r squared as required. And another assumption is if you take the so-called Buhl measure. Buhl measure is defined the following. You know what Buhl distance, relative fidelity. And definition is any part of the set in which you put center or a ball in sense of Buhl measure has the same volume. And then you get the following. P of r is equal to, for n equal 2, it is equal to, okay, it's up to proportionality constant r squared, but it's another factor like square root of 1 minus 4 l squared. And the point is, if you now restrict this measure to the classical case, you get exactly the measure alpha equal 1 half, so you get statistical measure. So this case corresponds to the flat case at alpha equal to 1, and this case corresponds, the formula is more complicated, I can also write it down, but there's no time, that alpha is equal to 1 half, so we have here flat and here statistical distribution. So I'm about to finish with a following statement that there are many different distributions as well in this set of classical probability distributions and quantum states. That for certain cases one can choose, for instance, this flat distribution or generated by Hilbert-Schmidt metric, for certain Buhl, but in certain cases, if you, for instance, know that our state was obtained by an operation, you know what kind of operation is it, which acts on a, let's say, random pure state. By the way, concerning pure state situation is simple. It's like sphere. You have a uniform distribution. It's called Fubini-Stabi metric, so basically it corresponds to the Haar measure at the sphere or at the complex projective space. So there is no problem how to define pure states randomly at the set of pure states. So you take a map, which perhaps you know, which tells you how the mixed states will obtain from a random pure state. And any phi, any operation, induces a certain measure. Let's call it, let's say, mu phi, which is defined in the space of mixed state. And for instance, if phi is just, if you take an ancilla and take phi of psi psi is just equal to partial trace with respect to, let's say, k of state psi psi, such that psi belongs to the composite Hilbert space Hn times Hm. So it's a very natural assumption that you know that you work with the object of size n and the ancilla has size, sorry, k, then you can induce a measure in space of mixed states where It's defined by this operation, and it happens that if k, the size of our system, is exactly equal to the size of the main system, you get the flat measure, HS measure. So to summarize, in my opinion, if you don't know nothing about quantum states, it's perhaps good to use the Boole measure. If you know, for instance, more that they were obtained from pure states by some operation you can control, you can perhaps use such a measure. But then, of course, it's in a sense up to your choice which measure you can choose. Yes. So.
Just a matter of vocabulary, the Jeffries priority, calling Jeffries a beta distribution with alpha beta being 1/2.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes? One.
Just wanted to point out that you have 1 million.
No discussion, no.
And there was no discussion.
No, I was told we have 15 minutes for discussion.
No, okay.
Anyway, I want to ask.
I think that we can.
We're willing to escape.
Well, the schedule was.
Oh, we have 15 minutes.
Because it's a discussion.
I'm sorry.
We can go until 11:45, which is when Robert is going to present his result.
So we have 15 minutes for questions, discussions,
yes.
Conjectures, etc.
So if I'm talking too much, but now please, one follow, say something.
No. Just.
Okay, not to lose time. Yes.
What can we say about power measure on non-compact groups?
Well, it's perhaps outside the main scope of this discussion, because here we basically want to discuss probability measures inside the space of mixed states, which is fortunately compact.
Mm-hmm. Only for finite dimensions.
Okay.
If you're interested in infinite dimensions, it's a relevant question.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. I haven't mentioned that. It's everything is easier if you assume that the size of the Hilbert space is finite. If it's infinite, it may be not hopeless, but it's much more complex. Okay. I see your point. But I will not waste our time to answer.
What's
an non-compact
group?
Yes.
May I ask you, if I understood well, you were talking about non-infinite parameters.
Yes, exactly. I was talking about
the first works.
Yes, if you you have different priors, if you don't know nothing, you can use the view, for instance, measure. If you know about operation phi, you can use this measure. Yes?
My question then, the question then is, how is in quantum theory? Do we really have a right to think about some priors, some informative priors? Because my impression is very pragmatic, all the information do we have in quantum theory is the information for the measurement. So, okay, let's start from the scratch, from the theory, and start with these non-informative priors. But if you are thinking about some prior, in my opinion, it could be at least a danger going to be. Something like supposing, okay, let's suppose that we have now a point which is exactly in this point and it's moving in this direction. And of course, quantum theory is sometimes very, very sensitive to assumptions which cannot be justified.
Okay, I agree.
Is there any prior which doesn't come from the measurement?
Okay, so I don't know if there's not. As I mentioned at the very beginning, I don't believe that you can find a concrete answer to your question. That exists, I will mention because it's anybody. No. But at least I can find some arguments.
Because you have quantum theory, there are many, many branches.
Okay.
Different things. So in the discrimination problems, in the kind of game when somebody's preparing something and there is somebody who knows something, I can imagine that yes, a prior, the 99%, it's this, but the other people are just guessing and they could be completely wrong. But if you are really thinking about the very, let's say, on the fundamental level, what we can learn from nature, I would say that the only prior is this non-informative, if there is no something like that, we know something, for example, that we cannot know in principle, we cannot know that the same is true, for example.
Okay. May I say, this is to some degree the subject of our discussion this afternoon, the foundational question of prior or not prior.
We'll answer the question about the non-compact case. So in the non-compact case, the group is not unimodular. So it means that the left and the right invariant measure are different. There is a modular function connecting the two. And what happens is that usually if you take the representation of it is not square summable, first of all, because you need to have, in order to have a faithful representation, an infinite dimensional representation. And most of the time it's not square summable. And there are some vectors from which if you act with a group, you get a square sum of a representation. And what happens is that if you take an irreducible representation, if you take the orbit of an operator under the group, in a when the group is only unimodular, namely when the left and the right are the same, this orbit is proportional to the trace of the operator. So integral over U, okay, operator U daga is the trace. If you have a non-compact group with is not unimodular, with the left and right invariant measure, what you get is another operator, which is called the Duflo-Moore or whatever, virtual dimension operator, Duflo-Moore operator, in the trace and out of the trace. Okay. That's the way in which you do the end. So it's something very, very different from the file.
Okay, well, if I could ask you to concentrate our attention, because time is running, to the simplest case where M is finite. Okay. Then we need the same thing.
About the simplest case, but non-philosophical.
Yes.
The map between U and rho is subjective, injective. I mean, it's not one-to-one. So in this particular formal, P rho is equal to P U, you have to integrate over U.
I mean, this in fact not this phase of unitary group but the flat manifold.
Exactly.
You know, there was no time. You can
there
measure induced on flat manifold by the Hall measure.
Yeah, I'd like to introduce some extra noise in the discussion.
Okay.
You haven't mentioned one which I believe is very, you know, relevant. It goes in the direction of Zenia, what he said. This is this Chernoff metric, which is related to the fact that, you know, distinguishability between two states. It gives you a very natural interpretation of distance between two states.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, two states are more easily to, I mean, if two states are more easily distinguishable, then somehow they'd be farther apart. If they are not so, you know, easily distinguishable, they should be close together.
Sure.
So, I don't know, I just like to say that.
Yeah, thank you.
It's natural one.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. To me, it's more natural than Buddhist in this sense.
Mm-hmm.
But sorry, who was next? Who have not talked yet? Yes, you are.
So I have a provocative just question for everyone, and particularly the experimentalists. If we set aside, Zdenek's very good question about whether I should use a prior to describe my ignorance about an unknown state at all. Suppose that I do want to describe it with a prior. As Carol has pointed out, an easy assumption to make is that that distribution of unknown states would be unitarily invariant, and then I only have to pick something over the eigenvalues. For, let's say, 100 qubits, I have an unknown state of 100 qubits. My question is, should I consider unitarily invariant priors? Because if I do, I'm including a lot of states that no quantum computer could build in the age of the universe, and perhaps nature can't build those states either.
Yes.
Should I consider a non-unitarily invariant prior? If so, how might I build such a thing?
Good point. So similar question to experimentalists. If you are asked to construct in your lab, let's say 2-qubit state of the random, how would you do it, and what measure would you get?
I think the question is that we want a prior about what sorts of time evolutions happen in the real world.
And
a typical one that people make is that there are a lot of 1- and 2-body interactions and very few fundamental higher body interactions. So you might look for something that's invariant under 1- and 2-body unitaries and ignore the others.
Okay.
One
more issue. Could I ask you a simple question? If you have 1-qubit system, is it simple in experiment to decide a random state with a uniform distribution at the Bloch sphere? Is it easy for you?
Yes. Somebody would ask. Yeah,
sorry, no. Pure. No. You have a state which A, you know it's pure, and B, you know that it's somewhere at the surface of the Bloch sphere, not inside, and the distribution is uniform. Can you do it?
It sounds like a not possible state.
Really?
Well, it sounds like my friend makes it, and he just doesn't tell me what he made.
I was thinking you take the state up, and you rotate it with a random unit somewhere, and you finish.
Yeah.
So the time, you have to have a random rotation and random time. And mathematically, it looks simple.
Yes. So can I rephrase slightly, maybe? Can we prepare an arbitrary pure state on the Bloch sphere?
Yes.
Just, and are there any single states that are easier to prepare than the others? And the answer is no.
Yes.
You can prepare them all just as easily for a single qubit pure state.
Okay, this is right. And for a two qubit system?
Yes.
No.
No. But so you have the same probability for separable state and entanglement state. Can you do it?
Wait.
We can do it, but some are harder than others.
I would say that all of the pure states are equally easy for, say, like a sandwich source.
Including entanglement and separable, they are safe.
So
including
entanglement, a source to make it look equally easy to do any of them.
True. For not all systems are all pure states equally easy.
Okay, but can you, in your lab, can you do it for me, for instance, to generate on random a pure state of two qubit system with the property that the separable state will have the same likelihood as the best state? Maximum entanglement?
The separable state will have the same likelihood. So
all of them will have the same probability.
Okay, so I can make any one that you want.
And if you tell us how to get these parameters from a distribution,
yes, if you provide a random number, I will make whatever state.
Okay. Yes, that's all. Thank you. So who else then? No. John? No.
But for three, that's not true.
Three qubits.
Yes?
I just wanted to say that the randomness is also defined, I guess, in a very pragmatic way. The point is that you are usually controlling few parameters which are controlling your state. So the natural answer from experimentalist point of view, I would say, is just to choose these parameters, these controlling parameters in a random way.
Okay, but you need but then you need to assure that the distribution of those parameters is this one which will give the measure we wish.
No, will be very different. But what I'm saying is that you are controlling something through some parameters. It depends on the implementation, the nucleus.
Yeah.
But then we choose the people are doing. I don't want the
okay.
I see laboratories are doing. They are preparing some.
Okay. I think we have 2 more minutes, so who would like to, yes,
a quick question for the experimentalists. So what's the purity that you can do for a single qubit and a two qubit?
If you really try a single qubit, I would say 10 to the minus 4, 10 to the minus 5.
Is it then? For two qubit?
10 to the minus 2 to 10 to the minus 3.
But sorry, this is 1 minus purity. Impurity, yes?
Yes,
1 minus
purity. Yes,
okay. 10
to the minus.
No, this is quite good.
This is
good. Okay.
Congratulations. Well, actually, sorry. So that depends on the state. If you just want to make a pure separable state, 10 to the minus 5.
What's the worst 2 qubit state?
Yeah.
Okay.
And for other systems?
And
the
minus.
What are you doing?
Maybe.
Mind traps, maybe. Those to 10 to the minus 3.
For
a single qubit,
yeah.
And maybe 10 to the minus 2 or 2.
Okay, so cool. Last question? Yes, so thank you. Yes.
I was just going to say, isn't a prior just a statement of prejudice? So it doesn't matter what we choose as long as we take enough measurement results. We agree in the end.
Okay, depends for
somebody. A prior is intended to be a statement of unprejudice. It gets if you are trying to design an objective or non-informative prior,
mm-hmm.
then it should describe your ignorance.
Yeah, but in a sense, one simple assumption one has to make that of course this prior is not a singular measure. It has to be as smooth as possible.
Mm-hmm.
If you start with a singular measure, of course, likely it's not a good one. Yes, the last three must here.
Maybe the prior becomes more relevant when you increase the dimension of the hyperspace. In infinite dimension, for example, you're there without the prior because there is no invariant measure. So what you can do? No, it doesn't exist.
Okay.
You have to say that there is your house is in an infinite universe and you don't have a prior.
We really have to finish the very last words and we are done. Yes.
Just on that note, yes, I imagine that if you choose different priors, ultimately, somehow, once you make enough measurements, the information in the original prior might be erased. But the problem is, for an experimentalist, we want to do our experiments in as short a time as possible, so we'd rather not get to that point.
Yeah, it's really easy to get there.
Okay, let's thank you very much. Let's close the discussion.